welcome to my travel podcast, Life's a Beach. Every week I invite a special guest to take us on a journey together to their favourite holiday destinations and to reveal their top travel tips and tales. My passenger today is one of the world's finest actors. You may know him for Frost Nixon, Good Omens, The Twilight Saga, The Queen, Underworld, or playing Chris Tarrant in Quiz. He also slums it by working with me on Sky's There's Something About Movies. But listen, if you want to get all festive, you can watch him now in Last Train to Christmas, which is available on Sky Cinema, and it is so good. You're going to love it. Please, welcome on board, Michael Sheen!
This is the final boarding call for Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen, this is the final boarding call for Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen, Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen! Michael! Michael!
Thank you.
My passenger today is Michael Sheen. Welcome on board, Alan Eyre.
Oh, I'm feeling sick, Alan. You're feeling sick. I'm not enjoying it.
I'm wearing
it's being close to you again. Oh dear.
Try and be nice. It's nearly Christmas, Michael.
Yeah, it was the chicken. What are you serving on this plane?
Well, yeah, the oven was on the blink. I'm so sorry. It wasn't cooked through, was it?
It wasn't.
We should be doing turkey really because it's Christmas, but yes. And yes. If you want a panini, I've got them in the back. Just let me know.
Thank you very much.
What kind of a traveller are you? Do you take magazines on board, podcasts, books? What do you do
when you're on
your flight?
I always take a book on, which I then never read.
Of course,
because,
classic.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's usually something by you or Tom Allen, to be honest. Yeah.
We'll get you off on a good sleep.
So I'm not the only one who never reads it. But but no, I take a book and then, so I've always got good intentions of, I'll get this, I'll read this book on this plane.
Yeah.
And then I put my headphones on and then it's just listening to Aha, essentially.
Yeah, of course.
It's going through the list of stuff and going, oh, I didn't realise I had that on my phone. And then I listen to all kinds of music. And then what tends to happen as well, I'm quite a maudlin traveller, I realise.
Oh, no, maudlin?
Yeah, I cry a lot on planes. It must be something to do with the
altitude, is it?
Alcohol. I think it's a combination of the altitude, the alcohol, and maybe just travelling, movement.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started driving, I remember if I... was driving quite a long distance. The first time I ever drove a long distance was from Port Talbot to Manchester to start a job early on in my career. And I remember driving to Manchester, and I remember getting quite emotional on that journey as well. I think there's something about travelling that kind of...
Don't tell me that was alcohol and altitude, that you'll get us cancelled.
It was because I was reading your book as I was driving.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. But I'm sure other people have this. When you watch a film on a plane... that you can find yourself getting very emotional about it. And you would never, you know, get emotional about it normally.
Do you watch yourself on planes if you're in a film?
No, but I do look around. The first thing I do is I get the thing out and see, am I in anything? And then, and that's just like a superstition thing.
Yeah.
Check if I'm in something that's on the in-flight entertainment, I feel better. Mm. And then I spend the rest of the flight looking around at everyone else, see if they're watching it. And if they're watching it, then I'll sort of like, when I wander past to go to the bathroom, I might just linger a little bit by the seat and see if someone goes, oh. And once I was at an airport, I was going to LA and I was at the carousel in LA. And there was a production of Carousel on in the amazing, extraordinary, really. No, I was at the baggage carousel, and I saw just a little bit further up from me Anton Deck.
Wow.
Yeah, we clearly been on the same flight. I hadn't seen them. Obviously, they were in first class. I was in economy.
And they are quite short. They might have been in front, and you never saw them.
They might have been next to me. And I, so they were there, and I thought, oh no, there's Anton Deck up there, and then Ant. Or maybe Deck, I'm not sure. No, it was Ant. Ant said, we've just been watching you in Frost Nixon on the plane.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, because I'd not met them before.
No.
And so I thought, oh, that's a double whammy. Not only have passengers on the plane been watching me, it's and celebrity passengers.
Yeah, and that's a bit Twilight Zone, them watching you and then you turn up.
And then
up.
Them seeing me there. Yeah. And that was what made him go, oh, a bit freaked out now. Yeah. Just been watching you interviewing Nixon.
Hello, you two. Are you here by yourself? Does your mummy and daddy know you're here? Have they left you? Oh, it's Ant and Dec. Oh, I'm so sorry. Bon appetit. Enjoy your flight.
They put that live at the Apollo, the comedy series, on, I think, on Virgin or BA, and I'm on one of those.
Right.
And this woman, I could see her watching me, and she didn't laugh once. It really ruined me holiday.
Well, as I say, the reason why people are crying when they're flying is a mixture of things. Alcohol, altitude, and Alan Carr.
All the owls.
All the owls.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Alan Air. Please enjoy Frost Nixon on the in-flight movies.
Well, listen, speaking of travel, we've got to talk about The Last Train to Christmas.
Right.
Oh, it was so good. It's so good.
Well, of course, you're too young to remember the 80s.
Of course,
so a
yeah,
lot
I've
of that would have been interesting for you, wouldn't
old
it? Yeah.
People.
The time travel aspect.
Yeah. And if they want a cracking story and they want to see Michael Sheen in a lot of wigs, oh, my God. Can you describe, because, okay, this is how I got it, yeah. The
right.
train is
yeah.
a metaphor for life. And as you travel down, you're going in the different carriages and your life is sliding doorsy, bit Christmas. You're seeing what could have been, what if, multiple... Multi...
Right.
Multi...
It's a lot simpler than that.
No, come on.
It's the basic premise... Man on train discovers that if he moves forward a carriage, he moves forward 10 years in his life. If he moves back a carriage, he moves back 10 years in his life. And then starts changing things. And then it all goes to pot.
That destiny, choices.
But, I mean, you could, I suppose, say that it's a metaphor for the journey of life. Forever. But
for him... be deep. For but, once, people always say I'm shallow. I try and be deep and you shoot me down. Oh, I mean, it's a man on a train, Alan.
Nobody was saying that about Back to the Future, were they? Well, it's a metaphor for... No, it's just he goes to the future.
Yes, I know. But it's fascinating to watch.
Well, it's a bit like, I mean, it's a Christmas film. It's all set on Christmas Eve. Yeah. So it's this train journey
and
from...
And the ending.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
I had a lump
you've got a... You had a lump where?
Hear me. Oh, sorry. On my throat.
Oh, right. Okay. It's radio podcast.
I get aroused on trains because I'm so young. I'm like a teenager.
Did you used to... Yeah, I remember
going?
I used to sit above the wheel on the school bus sometimes and I had to stop because it was embarrassing.
Oh, my God, yeah. And you can go over cattle grid. Well, don't even go there. All up the windows.
But the film is a bit like, I mean, it's in a tradition of other Christmas films, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because like Christmas Carol with Scrooge and It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
You've got a man who is essentially shown different points in it, choices he's made through his life. And is able to kind of now reflect on that and think, well, was that a bad choice, good choice? And then look at the consequences and what his life adds up to. So there's that kind of aspect to it. But this character, Tony Towers, is not like characters that you've seen in that kind of a thing.
No. He's a wide boy.
He's 1985, it starts. He's a big name on the East Midlands nightclub circuit, Tony Towers. Larger than life character. Reminiscent of Peter Stringfellow, probably.
Yeah. Well, you've got the same air as him.
Yes, yeah. So Julian Kemp, who wrote and directed the film, I think the germ of the idea came after he read Stringfellow's autobiography.
Yeah.
And then that started him thinking about that kind of a character and then what happens if someone like that was then to go through this sort of process. You know, so he's not really thought much about his life and the choices he's made and now he's suddenly confronted by it and then gets to maybe change things. And of course, I mean, you think if you're able to go into the future or the past... Would you be tempted to change things?
Oh,
wouldn't
God, you?
You would.
But
I mean, the nightmare of what happens. I mean, that you realise that so many things are connected in your life.
Yes, yeah.
The thing that messed me up. What do you think about this? The randomness of life.
Yeah.
Like you think about people who you've met who have become incredibly important in your life. What if you'd just not gone in that room at that time, or gone 10 minutes later, or not? Like, and that you've never met that person.
That actually messes your head up, doesn't it?
It does.
I'm reading at the minute Billy Connolly's book, Why Windswept and Interesting, and he said how he got into meditation. And he says he loves meditating. And he says he went for a very weird stage where if he thought about someone, he actually would bump into them. I mean, he said it became a bit of a problem. And then he went to see this guru man. And he said, that's through meditation. You're opening up your mind. You're seeing these things are manifesting because you're willing them to. Well, and honestly, it's one of the best books I've ever read.
Is that how he married Pamela Stevenson? Because I thought about her a lot in the 80s and 90s, I have to say.
Even I had a crush on Superman too. Do you remember in that space suit? Bumps in all the right places, eh, lads?
Not the 9 o'clock news. Oh, dear.
Oh, but that is before my time.
Right, is it?
It is!
Is it?
How old do you think I am?
I mean, mid-50s? All right, early 50s.
You're okay.
But you're pushing it now.
No, but I got into her. I mean, I am gay, but I mean, I fancied her.
Right.
I fancied her, and I'm like a card-carrying homosexual.
Yes. I've seen your card. You carry it well.
Stamped many a time.
Hello, everyone. You're on board the Paddington 1987. No, that's not the time. That's the year.
How many different wigs? I mean, let's go about it.
Right.
Prosthetics. Are you in a love-hate relationship with prosthetics?
I'm, I've played a lot of real life characters.
Yes.
So, you know, Tony Blair, Kenneth Williams, Brian Clough, all of David Frost. And I've always tried to keep away from the prosthetics because people always say, well, we thought we might give you a nose or a bit of a chin.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. I think it's better in the past to not draw attention to how much I like look like or don't look like the person.
Yeah.
And just try and go with what I've got. So hair, always very important. Get the hair right.
Yeah,
I feel like that does a lot of work for you.
Were there a lot of wigs you were wearing?
Well, not as many as I would like to think. It's mainly my own hair. So the 80s one, yes, that's
awkward.
A wig. Yeah. But a lot of it, I've got very a very adaptable hair. Now, this has been a big thing in my career. It's helped
I'd
me a lot.
To have adaptable hair.
Yeah. I can, because I've got curly hair.
Yeah.
Then you've got the chance of straightening it out. Have you ever gone straight?
No. Always been bendy.
Always been bendy. But being able to relax my hair is very useful because then it's, and especially after lockdown, my hair had grown very long. I mean, we filmed There's Something About Movies.
Yes.
Over the last 2 years. I mean, I had a lot of hair.
Yeah.
So then when you...
And then you turned out clean shaven. You're clean shaven now, but then we were like, why are you clean shaven? Then Chris Tarrant, weren't
you? That's right, exactly,
Yes.
So the hair can do a lot of work. But it's quite... my hair is the main part of my career, to be honest. That's the secret to my career, is that it can do lots of interesting things. And so in this film, I got to really make the most of that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a wig for the sort of stringfellowy look.
Yeah.
There's a wig for the 70s kind of Rod Stewart rocker.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything else is me, to be honest.
What about you in the white shorts?
Yeah, that's my own hair. That's my own hair. Up top and below. Those shorts are so tight, you can see my hair down below as well, can't you?
Do you know what? That was my best Christmas present. Seeing you in those shorts, I was like, I was back on that bus above the wheel.
So there's a section in the...
I didn't know you had these sexy legs. When we worked together, you're always gotten behind the desk. So it's like when you remember when they saw Angela Rippon on Come Dancing. Like, wow, I didn't know you had great pins.
On Morecambe and Wise, when she came up from the other day.
Yeah, that was it, yes.
Well, so that character, that's an alternative 80s look.
Yeah.
When in a version of Tony Tower's life where he becomes a radio DJ. So it's sort of based on like that Mike Reed, Noel Edmonds, that kind of look. And in the script, and they were, for some reason, we thought they're always in like tennis shorts in that period. When they did the Radio 1, what was it they used to do where they'd go to different cities in the summer?
Oh, yeah, and they came to Northampton.
What was it called? The Radio 1 Roadshow.
Radio 1 Roadshow, I think.
And so when you saw the DJs do it, they always were wearing like little skimpy white tennis shorts, like they were in Wham or something. And so we thought we should get a pair of white shorts. And I don't know what this says about me, but the costume lady kept bringing me like really long shorts.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, no, I think the idea is that they're quite short. And she'd say, are you sure? I was like, yeah, that's the gag. Then you, and so the ones I actually wear are, I mean, they're quite something, aren't they?
Oh, my God, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't leave a lot to the imagination.
No, no. Like I said, it's the best Christmas present you could ever give.
But
you.
There's a shot where, because every time I move through the doors in the film, that's the time change.
Yes.
So there's as I come through the door, and I've come from, I can't remember, the 70s, I guess, or whatever, and I come through the door, and I walk into essentially a commercial being filmed that my character is supposedly doing. But of course, me as Tony in the film doesn't know that. I've just walked into the carriage and find myself. It's like Quantum Leap.
Yes.
Did you ever watch Quantum Leap?
Yes.
So he just finds himself in a different part of his life, but he doesn't know what the circumstances are. So in this particular bit, he walks in and there's a camera crew and people watching him. And it's like an awful nightmare. It was very weird filming that bit because it is like an actor's nightmare where you go, oh, I'm on stage or I'm being filmed and I don't know what to do. And Robin Asquith is looking at me.
Oh, I know, yeah. And that just shows how great the props people are because it's so well researched. You'll spot like a head like a Portillo or you'll see a reflection and there's just little things and then you suddenly dawn on you. It's such a clever idea.
Yeah, yeah. And then as I stand there, and I would sort of look in the window of the train to check what I look like or where I am.
Yeah.
And I saw myself in these shorts and I had a conniption. It was really quite extraordinary. Gets a big laugh, I think.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
Hello, this is a message for anyone near the carousel. There are a pair of white, skimpy hot pants. I mean shorts. They're left by the side of the carousel. If they are not retrieved soon, they will be destroyed by bomb disposal. Please do not approach the shorts. Do not approach the shorts. They're gonna explode, okay? I swear to God.
Do you travel on trains a lot?
Traveling by train is my favourite way to travel. I love going on trains. One of my favourite things that I've ever done for a birthday was there's a train that goes from Los Angeles Central Station all the way up the coast of California. And when I say up the coast, I mean literally, like the water is right there outside the window, all the way up the coast of California. And then it goes on. It takes 2 days.
Yeah.
So it's a sleeper. You get a little sleeper cabin. And it goes, at the end of the first day, so beautiful sunshine going up the coast. I did it because my birthday's in February. So beautiful sunshine, going up the coast, looking at the ocean next to you. Oh, it's wonderful. Then you get your bed down and you're going under the Golden Gate Bridge at about midnight. And you go to sleep. Then you wake up the next morning, open the curtains, and it's snow everywhere because you're going through Washington State. And then about 4 o'clock in the afternoon the second day, you get to Seattle, and that's where I've got off. But it carries on going into Canada. But I've done that journey a few times, and just on my own, and I take music to listen to, read a book or not, and just look out the window, and I love it, absolutely love it.
Isn't that funny? Because every time people talk about going up past Big Sur and all that, it's always driving in a car.
Ah.
And I never thought, because that's the one thing, you've got Greyhound buses everywhere, but I'm thinking, how amazing if there was more of a train network around America.
The weird thing I found as well there is that people think you're weird if you're on the train. Mm. So it's not like, because when I did this Coastal Starlight Tour for the first time, this train journey, I thought, people must love this. This must be so popular. There's barely anyone on it. One of the carriages is just glass. So it's the observation carriage. So you sit in there on seats and you just look out. And when you're going through the Washington State with the snow, it is amazing. But you look around.
It's like being in a snow globe. And
It is like being in a snow globe.
Yeah, but the snow's outside.
Yeah, exactly. And then you sort of look around and go, yeah, it's just all people over about 70.
Mm.
So sort of people who are retired and weirdos.
Yeah.
It is quite odd.
But they think you're weird in America if you walk.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the strange thing. I think people going on a sort of public transport, it's sort of a weird, it's got a very different attitude over there.
Yeah, because you go, oh, I need to get to like the supermarket. Oh my God, you're going to have to walk. And it's like basically where that bin is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So unless you go in your car, in your own private little bubble car, then people get a bit nervous about sharing public space with other people.
Wrong,
it's
isn't
really
it?
Weird.
Because people think you're homeless if you walk. Yeah. And I love walking. Yeah.
When my mum and dad used to come and visit me in America, because I lived in LA for about 15 years, because my daughter grew up there. So I lived there to be near her. And my mum and dad would come over and they would say, I'd say to them, what are you doing tomorrow? Because if I was working or something, what are you going to do tomorrow? Well, we were thinking we would go down the beach. And I'm like, all right, okay. And how are you going to get there then? Well, we just get the bus. So they would get on the bus just outside the house, you know, get on the bus, and they'd go off down to Santa Monica. And I'd sort of say to them, people don't really do that much here. Yeah. But, no, we get the bus. Don't get a car. No. And they get on the bus, and then... And they'd say, oh, we met a lovely couple on the bus this morning. And they'd come out with these stories. And it was just brilliant. And I think, well, my mum and dad are now the weirdos on the bus.
Yeah.
On the public transport.
Oh, God, it shouldn't be like that.
No.
Okay, we're arriving at the bus stop, please. Can the two weirdos get off, please? Thank you.
You grew up in Port Talbot. Mm. Now, you were born in Newport.
Yes.
Now, listen, am I going crazy? But I performed Riverfront Theatre. Now, is there a Viking boat underneath the theatre, or is it my medication kicking in?
I think there is a museum there, isn't there, with an original or a recreation of a Viking boat, yes. I don't know Newport that well.
I don't think it's a recreation. I think it's an actual one. Is it in the River Usk? Does that
ring
a bell?
Yes, the River Usk. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I remember there, and the woman went, pss, pss, come here, and then she went downstairs and there was a Viking boat.
Under the theatre?
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. But that sounds like it might be. I mean, round Newport, there was a lot of Roman...
Yeah,
forts and Caerleon, where my auntie lives, that Caerleon, that was a Roman town, and so the Vikings and all that. It's very historic, so I wouldn't be surprised. But I was born there because my mum and dad come from Portalbert, and they're, you know, generations back. Yeah. And my dad got a job that in Newport, so my mum and dad moved to Newport, and that's where me and my sister were born. And then my dad got another job in Liverpool. So we went to live in Liverpool for a couple of years. Between the age of 5 and 8, I lived in, Wallasey in Birkenhead. But, you know, very near Liverpool. So it was a weird bit of my life where just for 3 years I lived there. And then he got a job back in Portalbert again and then went back to Portalbert. So I grew up in, I always think of Portalbert as my home, but I actually didn't live there until I was 8.
Well, you invest so much into it, because I've had a look at your philanthropy section in Wikipedia. You put me to shame, honestly, because all I do is sponsor a donkey. And you... I've had a look.
Yeah.
And I've performed there, one of the best gigs I've ever done. They were great.
In Portalbert? That's not what they say, Dallin.
No. Oh, here you go again. Can you just have a bit of Christmas spirit? No, unless it was the longest gig I ever did, because obviously they were laughing, then coughing so much. So it was like, I mean, I was like Billy Connolly and Ken Dodd. I finished at 1 a.m. But
where did you play? Can you remember where you played?
Oh, I can't. It was on
Princess Royal Theatre.
Princess Royal, that was it. No, absolutely great. Very white inside and all that. Really lovely. Mm. And then so I did my research. Is this true? Baked Bean Factory. No, Baked Bean Museum.
There's Captain Beanie.
Yep.
Who dresses up as a baked bean.
Oh,
a sort of superhero.
Stupid, I got it wrong.
Captain Beanie does a lot of amazing, like, fundraising and that.
Wonderful,
and,
great.
Yes, and I think maybe he says his house is a baked bean museum or something like that. I'm not sure it is.
Because when I looked it up, it said in brackets private. So I think maybe that. Oh, okay,
I think it might be his house, yeah.
And Banksy did a mural there.
Yes, he did.
So that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, so a few years ago now, this guy woke up one morning and was in his kitchen looking out his window, and he thought, why is there a group of people standing outside my garage? His garage was just like across the road. Yeah. It wasn't attached to his house, it was across the way. Yeah. And there was a group of people out there, and he's like, that's weird. And then he said, someone's bloody painted on my garage. And it turned out Banksy had done this thing on over through the night, presumably, because then that morning it was there. And people, and because I was in Los Angeles at the time, and I remember that day starting to see things on the internet and on social media about, I was like, Portalbert is trending. Why, what? Has it been blown up? And it turned out it was this Banksy. And then I thought about it, and I thought, this guy must be having a hell of a time at the moment, because he just woke up and it was on his garage.
Yeah.
And so I got in touch with him through sort of another person, And he was basically having a breakdown. People were calling from China and America, and you know, and he just didn't know how to deal with it at all. And so it was just before Christmas as well. So I remember, I sort of helped a little bit with organising some to protect the Banksy thing.
Because idiots come along and throw paint over it, which I never really understand why people do that. That is very odd, isn't it?
But I did think there's a bit of a issue around the security of the thing itself, and so and it was just before Christmas. Nobody was working; couldn't get anyone to come out and do anything. So then we managed to get some like plexiglass over it, and a guy in a caravan to look after it during the night, and that kind of stuff. And then until eventually, then the council got involved and all that, and it was fine. And I think he's written a book about it now. The guy.
Why not, love?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that was exciting. But it did split people a little bit because on the one hand, everyone was very excited that Banksy had done something in Port Talbot.
Yeah.
But then the theme of it was on a corner of the garage. So on one side of the wall, it was a little kid with his mouth open, and it looked like snowflakes coming down and catching the snowflakes on the tongue of the little kid. And then as you went around the other side, it was a skip on fire, and it was actually ash coming from the skip. So it was a kind of a comment on the pollution and the steelworks and industry and that kind of stuff. So it was very clever. It was a very clever thing. But it kind of split people in Port Talbot a little bit. Like I say, excited that Banksy had done something in Port Talbot. And then, what are you saying about our town? because people get very like that. We can say it, but you can't say it. You know, there's that kind of attitude in Port Talbot sometimes. So that was quite interesting.
Do you think you know who Banksy is?
I thought it was my dad. No, actually people started to think...
Your dad's Jack Nicholson.
Well, yes.
We know that.
People started to think it was me because it was in Port Talbot. There was all the, Michael Sheen's Banksy. I was like, have you seen the art I've done? but didn't Banksy get kind of revealed a few years ago? I seem to remember, no?
Well, people thought it was me at one point.
Did they?
Yeah, well, I'm actually Daft Punk.
I've had lunch with Daft Punk.
Have you? Yeah. Without the helmets on?
Yeah.
To the two gentlemen in row 2A and 2B who are wearing motorcycle helmets, can you please take them off? I'm afraid I don't care if you are Daft Punk. Can you please put them in the overhead lockers? Thank you.
Because I did a film, Tron, and they were in it. They did the music for it, and they were in it. I play this character who runs a nightclub in Tron, and they are my house band.
Wow.
So they're in the film with the helmets on. Yeah. But then at lunchtime, we just went on the bus.
Yeah.
And had lunch together, and they're just, you know, two middle-aged French guys.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they used to... And they send people in the helmets to go and do publicity stuff so they don't have to turn up. Can you find me the
wine with Michael Sheen? What's that one with the driving round the car with Stig?
Oh, Top Gear?
Yeah, Top Gear. He never took his helmet off because I thought, we'll be having like a vol-au-vent and a glass of Chardonnay with him. No, he disappeared. No. Proper mystique. I wouldn't know him if I passed him.
I did that as well, yeah. No, he didn't take it.
No. Yeah. And how fast did you go?
Annoyingly, I was slower than Jennifer Saunders.
Oh.
But she drives like a maniac. I've gone
very dangerous driver.
I've gone round Port Talbot in a sports car with Jennifer Saunders. I'm not doing it again.
Oh, yes. We watched that. Yes, I was seeing you going round. Yes. And was that after or before? There's something about movies.
No, after. Yeah, it was like we'd already done a few series of it. Yeah, it was lovely. In fact, I think it was last Christmas.
Oh,
was it,
God,
or the Christmas before? I can't remember now. Maybe it was the one before. But it was lovely taking her around Port Talbot. That was great.
So tell us then, where do you go for romantic times on holiday? Where do you go?
I mean, it's mostly the bathroom these days. Romantic times.
No,
well,
when you could travel. I mean, is it Rome? Is it Florence? Is it Paris?
Well,
what goes on there. I just find it intriguing where people go.
The most romantic places I've been probably, you know, I mean, Paris is lovely.
Oh, you can't go wrong with Paris. Lovely. On the Eurostar, love? Straight over. No, not on doing it on the Eurostar.
Yes, on the Eurostar. And that's very nice. I did a film there. I did a film called Midnight in Paris. That was very nice. Filming in Paris as well. It was lovely.
With Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Was she one of the poet? Was she T.S. Eliot?
No, I was in the modern day bit. So I was this very pedantic guy in the, who was going around all the museums with Owen Wilson and all that and pontificating about the stuff. And then he would go back in time and find out that I was wrong and all that. We went to the actual place. You know that famous painting of Monet with the water lilies in the
sort of.
And there's the Japanese bridge, Green Bridge, and we went to Monet's house. And he wasn't in, and the garden, and it looks exactly the same.
Wow.
It hasn't changed. With the little Japanese bridge and the same lilies and stuff. Amazing. It was extraordinary.
Did you go to, is it L'Orangerie where they've got his actual thing in?
Yeah. So we saw we filmed a scene where we're looking at the paintings.
Yeah. I'm going to watch that film again, you know. Yeah.
And then Owen Wilson goes back in time.
Yeah.
And you see it back in time. And so then we went out to his house to have a look at it. It was amazing. So that's very, I mean, that's sort of obvious. You know, everyone thinks of Paris as being romantic, don't they? Venice, I think, is
that's
beautiful.
Nice. That's lovely.
That's a lovely, lovely
place.
So
I went there with my mum, so it wasn't that romantic.
Right.
You got to get in there now before it floods.
Yeah, well, that's true. Cool. I mean, I hate to break it to you, but it's a bit wet already.
No, they've
obviously had a bit of trouble with the plumbing.
Yeah.
But it is beautiful there. And sort of like when I went there for the first time, the first time I ever went there was when the film The Queen was on at the Venice Film Festival.
Or did you say Le Lido?
Lido. All that was amazing and being able to see it in that way. But you do feel like it is like a film set almost. It sort of doesn't feel real when you're there. But I have to say the most romantic place for me, there's two most romantic places. I will always choose a snowy holiday over a hot holiday. I'm not so much of a beach person as I am. I love like snowy mountains. So I've only ever been skiing once.
Yeah.
But that whole thing of skiing and the resort and hot chocolate and I love all that. I find that very romantic. And I once stayed in a place called White Pod, which are these weird little, they look like something out of a 70s sci-fi film. Yeah. Little white, like golf balls, like transparent golf balls on the side of the Alps.
Yeah.
And one part of it is, like I say, there's just a bed in there and a wood burner and then a sort of transparent bit that you can see the sun coming up outside on the Alps. It's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. That is very romantic. And then the other place that I love, and it's my favourite place to go anyway, whether it's romantic or not, is by a lake, a cabin by a lake in Maine, in America. I love that. I love lakeside, cabin-y holidays. Yeah. Favourite thing.
Do you fish?
Sorry?
Fish. Do you fish?
No, I don't fish. I thought you were accusing me of smelling. You fish. No, I don't fish.
So what is it then? Is it your meditation?
It is a bit. It's the peacefulness of it. And there's some, I mean, I love being by the sea and I've grown up by the sea, but there's something about a lake, a big lake that I find just kind of magical. And you can hear the loons.
Loons, what's that?
So that's a particular type of bird. They go, it makes these weird noises. Like someone, I guess, maybe this is a bad thing to say, but I assume that they're called loons because it sounds a little bit like a crazy person.
Yeah, lunatic.
Shouting at the moon or something.
Yes.
And so you hear these noises and I get a little kayak, go out on the kayak at sunset, be out there and it's just still quiet, nobody else around it's beautiful. And then sit in the cabin and just read and, you know, just have coffee in the morning, sitting there looking at the lake. I absolutely love it.
I suppose with your work schedule as well, because you are always working, it must be so precious just to have that time.
Well, I started to go to this place in Maine. They've got lots of lakes there and, you know, it's very popular, the cabin holiday thing in Maine. And a friend of mine grew up in Maine and was having a big 30th birthday party. And so she invited people to come and stay. And I was trying to write something at the time. And so I thought, well, I need to go somewhere to write anyway. So I thought, well, I'll maybe go there a week before this party and I'll hire a little, you know, little cabin and I'll just sit there and I'll try and write something. So I went online and found this place and turned up there and had just the best week of my life sitting in this place and writing, and then went to this birthday party. And then I got so obsessed. I was like, I'm going to buy somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I came so, and I went back there year after year to the same place. And eventually I thought I should buy somewhere. It's just stupid that I'm coming here all the time. I should come and live here. And I came so close to buying a cabin on a tiny little island off the coast of Maine.
Yeah.
That is in it. You have to buy your own little lobster boat to get there. You can't get there by road or anything. And people kept saying to me, are you sure about this, Michael? I was, yes, yes, this is what I'm going to do. And I came so close to it. And I finally didn't, because my girlfriend at the time was like, I'm not going to Maine for every holiday we ever have. And so it just sort of made me pause. And I think now, thank God I didn't. I mean, I'd be living there on my own on this island, snowed in with my boat to keep me company.
Yeah. Isn't it funny, though, because when you think about Maine, for me, doesn't even come into the equation. I don't even think about it. It's always, for me, it's either Las Vegas or New York or LA or something like that. So,
well, it's where Stephen King lives as well. I'm a big Stephen King fan.
Oh, right.
So I also imagine that I'm in a Stephen King book when I'm there, which most people would think, hang on, but don't be, aren't they horror
yeah,
books?
Yeah, yeah. But it, you cock-a-doodle, you wake up and someone's got a block of wood between your ankles.
Yeah, exactly. but that gives it a little sort of a little magical edge for me.
Honeymoon suite or hammock?
Oh, hammock.
Oh. First aid kit or first aid shit? Do you...
What does that even mean?
I don't know. It just rhymes. No, it's like, will you take Mozzie Guard? Will you take a little bandage? Do you bother with insurance?
No, I don't do any of that.
Really?
No, not really.
Oh, okay. Well, no, that's a first aid shit then. First don't mock me questions. Thong or sarong?
Well, you've seen me in the white shorts.
Oh, so. Thong, please. Culture Vulture or Beach Babe?
Culture Vulture, yeah.
Okay, then. Or tip 'em or fuck 'em. And that's like when you've had great service all week and then you think, do you know what? I'm never going to see that chambermaid again. Fuck her. I'm not going to give her anything.
Oh, I see. All right. I thought you meant like actually have
Tom
sex
Jones
with them instead.
Tom Jones went tip 'em, then fuck 'em. I was like, no, Tom. It's one or the other.
There you go, love. See you next year. Oh, good.
I'm sure you tip. I've seen your philanthropy.
Yeah.
No, I've seen. I'm sure you do tip very generously.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, love.
Thank you for flying Alan Air.
Oh, Michael, that was brilliant. Thanks so much for flying Alan Air. And don't forget, please check out Michael's new film, Last Train to Christmas. It's on Sky Cinema now, and it is a corker. You're going to love it. We're going to have a little break because it's Christmas, but we are back in January with a bang. Yes, the king of podcasts, Louis Theroux, is going to be my first guest of 2022. I can't wait. And remember, guys, life's a beast.